Welcome. So this shiur wasn't supposed to happen because we were supposed to get all this done last time, but did not succeed. It was just too much. So you're launched into the middle of an omnah discussion, which hopefully will still be meaningful. We're up to the discussion of omnah for a worker's wages, right? We define omnah as either the seller overcharging or the buyer underpaying based on some objective value of the item that's being purchased, where there is some level of deceit involved in concealing or not divulging what the true value is, what should have been paid. So we're dealing with the question of whether or not will apply for the wages of a worker. So the most basic case that we deal with is the case of a poel, which we defined last time as somebody who is hired to work for a period of time. Although we need to refine that definition this week. Everyone agreed there is no onah when you're dealing with a poel. The Rambam wrote that, it's passing that way in the Shulchan Aruch. And the basis for it, among other things, was the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which we're going to have to come back to today, the Meshata Ani Bach Gemara. You have the case in which somebody is a fugitive, he's running away from prison, and or from being held prisoner at any rate, and he gets to the ferry, and he says, take me across, and the ferryman charges him a dinar instead of the much lower actual price. And so he gets across, and then he says, ha, just kidding, I never intended to pay you that high price. And the rule is, in fact, he can do that. He has to pay him the normal price. He doesn't have to pay him the jacked up price that the guy charged. So one of the points that we made, we discussed various aspects of this story, but one question that's asked is, why can't he claim onah? You overcharged me. So is this proof that in fact there is no onah when it comes to a poel, when it comes to somebody who's hired for time? So there are a whole host of reasons why that may not be the explanation. Nonetheless, that's one of the supports that's brought to suggest that there's no onah for a poel. In terms of the question of why there is no onah for a poel, and that's really the key to today's shiur as well, so there were different views. The Rambam's view, as well as the view of the Shulchan Aruch, is that the poel, the person hired for a period of time, is acquired for that period of time. And therefore he is an eved. And just like there is no onah for avadim, because the Gemara links them with karka, with land, so too there is no onah for a poel. We noted that the link to karka will apply then, according to this, to free people as well. We had a nice excursion into that discussion. We also noted that the link of poel with eved has other ramifications, like is somebody allowed to take a contract for more than 3 years to work in somebody else's home or in someone else's business. That may be a problem of turning oneself into an eved, and you're not supposed to make yourself into an eved. But that's a separate piece as a side note. But the Rambam's view is indeed that the reason why there's no onah for a poel is because the poel is linked to an eved. On the other hand, Ramban, Rashba, Ritva said that's not the issue. Rather, it's that onah only applies to memkar, as seen in the Psukim in Parshas Bahar. And there's no sale going on here. There isn't any kind of a purchase. And therefore, there's no issue of onah. And then we had a third idea from the Rashbam I'm not going to go into right now. But one of the ramifications of this dispute between the Rambam and the other Rishonim is the issue of a kablan. And we're going to have to discuss kablan more now. So we said that a poel and a kablan have the same rules for certain matters, such as the principle of halana sachar, that you're not supposed to delay somebody's wages. However, we do distinguish between kablan and poel in other areas, and particularly in the area of chazara, in terms of the issue of backing out of an agreement to work. We say that if somebody is a poel, you hired him to work for you for the day, and he leaves in the middle of the day, the rule is that there's no penalty to him. He has to be paid for the work he did for whatever period of time, and he can leave. And we do that in order to distinguish between him and an eved. We say we don't want him to be a slave. On the other hand, a kablan, if he backs out in the middle of the job, he can back out, but if he backs out in the middle of the job, he will have a penalty for having done so. There's a penalty in terms of his compensation for that which he had already done in the day. So the Kabbalan would not be considered an Eved if he were to remain at work. And applying that here, since the Rambam said that the Poel's exemption from Onah is because he is like an Eved, that exemption will not apply to a Kabbalan. And so we saw that, in fact, the Rambam says, if you take a look on the sheet, since you now have them, it was back in Source Ayin Aleph, the Rambam wrote, Nir Elisha Kabbalan Yesh Lo Onah. He said, yeah, I think that a Kabbalan actually does have...
They're not up to date.
Oh, really?
Just to the name of it.
Okay, so, but does that mean that you started from scratch, or you did print out the entire thing?
No, I just copied from there, and that's why.
Okay, so you don't have it. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mechira Perek Yigim Halacha Yiches that a Kabbalan, in fact, does have Onah, because there is no issue of comparison to an Eved. On the other hand, if I'm going to take the view of the other Rishonim, Rashba, Ritva, Ramban, and say that the reason why a Poel isn't subject to the laws of Onah is because there is no purchase, the same thing is true for the Kabbalah. You hired him to do a job for you. There's no purchase there either. And therefore, those other Rishonim will say that there is Onah for a Kabbalah. This is not like a minor nuance. There are all sorts of cases. If you go through Piskei Din Rabbaniim, you find all sorts of cases involving Kabbalanim and claims of Onah. Right? I hired somebody to redo my apartment. And he claims afterwards that he was given an incorrect estimate in terms of the number of square feet, and on the basis of that basis, he charged too little for the job that he's going to end up doing, and therefore he wants to charge more. Or you hire somebody to do a job, and he tells you, well, this is what the going rate is, and therefore that's what I'm going to charge you. And then you find out, actually, it's not the going rate at all. The going rate is much less than that. Case after case after case that comes up in this regard, some of which we'll be referencing in the discussion today, all hinge on this question of, is there Onah for a Kabbalan or not? Rambam says yes. Rashba, Ramban, Ritva would seem to say no. So we need to do a better job, and that's where we're going to start now, of defining what a Kabbalan is. When we say the Kabbalan is working for himself, as opposed to the Poel who's like an Eved, according to the Rambam, what exactly defines the Kabbalan as working for himself? So that's not only an issue within Halacha, that's an issue in secular law as well. Because employment law and tax law distinguish between what's called, on the one hand, an employee, which is like the Poel, and an independent contractor, which is like the Kabbalan. The IRS in the United States has a test that's based on three principles. One is behavioral control. Right, Jeffrey, this is what I sent you last night. One is behavioral control, meaning, can the boss tell you how to do the work, and when to do the work, with what tools to do the work? A second possible, and that makes you, the more control he has, the more of an employee you are. The second is financial control, meaning, what if you have expenses in the course of the job? Does he have to reimburse you for them, or are you doing them yourselves? Are you paid based on time, or are you paid at the end of the job? Right? If you're paid at the end of the job, if the expenses are your own as a worker, then you're much more of an independent contractor. Right? He just said, I'm going to pay you to do this job. You figure out how you're going to do it and when you're going to do it and what your costs are going to be. And then relationship of the parties is the third element of it. Things like benefits. Does your boss provide benefits? Is there a permanency to it? Is the work that you are doing as a worker the essence of his business, or is it just something that is ancillary but has to happen in order for his business to go forward? Right? Things like that will also matter. So, for example, if I own a restaurant and I hire somebody who's a plumber to set up the plumbing in the washroom, that's not inherent in the business. On the other hand, if I hire somebody to make fries, and I say, well, I want to call him a contractor, but that's key to my business, it's a lot harder for me to make that argument. So the same questions arise within Halacha. How do I define this difference? What makes somebody a Kabbalah? What makes somebody a Poel? And frankly, just like the IRS has found, and I assume the CRA in Canada as well, which I know because of the case you sent me, these cases are really best addressed on case-by-case basis rather than based on the rules. Meaning you can come up with rules that give you sort of general guidelines, But there are so many blurry lines in this. When I was a shul rabbi in the States, this was a big question. Are you a W-2 or are you a 1099? Is a shul rabbi really an independent contractor or an employee? Practical ramifications include parsonage and issues of who has to separate, who has to withhold for taxes and so forth. It's really a very cloudy area. And in halacha, it's even cloudier because we may actually have different rules regarding different areas of halacha. Meaning, the rule regarding chazara, that you can back out at midday, is about having freedom. The rule regarding onah is about not being called an eved. Those two may not be the same thing. There's more in this in the Pesachei Choshen. If you look in Chelek Dalet, Perek Yud Aleph, Ha'ara Yud Aleph, he talks about the distinctions between different areas of halacha. But Lemaisa, when we deal with defining a kavlon, we have three different schools. School number one says it's based on when you work. And there are two sub-schools within that. One approach says that means if you have no particular hours in which to work, you can choose your own hours, you are a kavlon. And the Mordechai says, is quoting Rabbeinu Yoel, that he's talking about hiring a teacher, or you're hiring somebody to learn. And you say, whenever you want to do it, at some point within the year, you can do it. That makes him a Po'al. And the Sma says this, and now that'll be the first source on your sheet. It's Ayin Dalet for those who have the full sheets. He says, V'din Eved Yeshlo, the Po'al has the status of an Eved, I added in the bracketed word. The Avagav V'yochol Lachzor Bo Afilu B'chatziyom, even though he can walk away midday, nonetheless he has the status of an Eved. Jumping over the reference, Mikol Makom Koshlo Chazar Bo Din Eved Yeshlo, until the worker walks away, he is status of an Eved, Aval Kablon. De Gomer Hamalacha Disochra Litzorcha Emas Sheyirtze, I believe it should be Sochro, but it's Sochro in every text I've seen. But he says, "Degomer amalacha desochro litzorcha ema sheyirtze." He does the work whenever he chooses. Ein lo din eved. He does not have the status of an eved. Gomer, we assume, does not mean to complete it, as in he has a time limit on the task. It means when he does the work. And the Chachma Shlomo talks about this. He says, if you hire a teacher for 2 hours per day, but you don't specify which hours those are, he's a kavlon rather than a poel. It's up to him to choose when he's going to work. The other school within this approach is, in fact, the time limit school of thought. If he has no time limit for the task, I hire you, make me a cabinet. No deadline on when you're going to produce the cabinet. So then you are a kavlon. But once you have a set time to complete it, that makes you a poel, even if you can work at the time of your choosing. So if I say to you, make me a cabinet, I want it by Monday, that now makes you a poel, even though you can work whenever you want between now and Monday. And the Truma Sadeshin says this in Source Ayin Hay. Yeah?
Didn't that come up last week and we said that that wasn't true until the number of hours that he would need to complete it?
Right, so that was one of the arguments that we brought last week in terms of the issue of being able to back out. That was the Nachal Yitzchak. No, it wasn't the Nachal Yitzchak. It was... I did bring it in tangentially, and I was worried. No, it was the Avnei Nezer. That's right. The Avnei Nezer did it. I knew I was getting myself in trouble by mentioning it, because it was really premature. But the Avnei Nezer mentioned it. He wanted to know, if a kavlon really isn't like an eved, why is the kavlon able to walk away at all from a job? Forget the fact that we penalize him for walking away. Why is he allowed to walk away at all? He gave an agreement that he was going to do the job. See, Avnei Nezer gave multiple answers, and one of his answers was that the kavlon does not have a set time to work, and therefore in the beginning of the job, you can't force him to work at any given time. He says, I'm not working now. You say, well, you told me you were going to do it. Yeah, I'll do it later. And then when you get down to crunch time, he needs 3 hours to make the cabinet, and there are only 3 hours left. Well, now he's an eved. And therefore he's allowed to walk out, and therefore he's able to walk away. That was the cute answer from the Avnei Nezer, which, yes, seems to say that having a time limit for your task is going to ultimately convert you into being an Eved. But the Truma Sadeshin is the real source for it. The case
there are several tests involved in how you define each one. So all you gotta do is satisfy one, or you have to satisfy all.
So any one of them will make him into a kavlon rather than a poel. Any one of them will make him into a kavlon rather than a poel. So in other words, if I accept the standard, if I accept the standard of he has to show up at a particular time, that's good enough no matter what the other tests show. If I accept the standard of he has no time limit, though, that assumes, really, this is the idea that there's no time limit for his work includes there is no set time for his work. You follow? In other words, those who say it's about having a set time to work will not view a time limit as being meaningful. However, those who view a time limit as being meaningful will also view having a set time as being meaningful. So, yeah, we'll see what I mean more when we get to the second school, which is a completely different one of what the employer is purchasing. But in terms of the time limit for the task, you know what, in the interest of time and being able to make sure everybody's here and get some chance to give shiur also today, I'm going to do it outside of the Truma Sadeshin, but you can see it there. He says that it's onah if there is a set time for completion. That's the principle. That makes him into an Eved, even if he is free to work at the time of his choosing. That's the message that you'll see if you look at the case that I brought you in Ayin Hay. Okay. And the Nisivos also says, the Nisivos in the Biurim in Reish Samach Dalid Ches, in discussing the case of Toldinar Bahavirani, right? His argument is that the reason why you couldn't claim Onah from the ferryman in that case in the Gemara where the ferryman overcharges is because you want him to take you across the thing right now. And therefore he's really a poel. There's a time limit for his task, which is do this before they catch up to me. So that's Anisibus' argument. However, the time definitions are difficult. Both these time definitions, having particular hours and having a time limit, is very difficult because fundamentally Kabbalanim have deadlines. You never hire somebody to do a job for you without telling him, and I need it done by X time. I mean, are you going to tell me there's no such thing as a pure Kabbalah now? Because people are told, you know, at a set time. And that goes back to that Abnei Nezer that we mentioned before, Elisha. It's also problematic because the Trumas Hadeshin himself, as quoted in the Shach, says that if you hire somebody to prepare wine for you at the time of the harvest, we treat him as a Kabbalah. Right? If you take a look at the Shach in Ayin Vav, or Gimel, he says, Avagav dimea batzir kitzvasan yadua. Even though you know when the set time is for harvesting the grapes, the Eidam Meshubad Rak Zmanazeh, and he's only bound at this time, Mikomakam Ho, the Eidam Kotsev Lo Sachar Lefi Hayamim, since you don't set his wages based on the days or the weeks or the months, right? Therefore, Chashim Kablanus, that's why it's considered Kablanus. Kamo Kamalitzor Dimea Katsir, no different from hiring somebody to harvest the grain at the time of the harvest. So the Shach himself notes, the time definition, saying it's based on being hired to work at a particular time, or that you have to get the job done by a particular time limit, that's chalash. That's really, it's weak. Kabbalanim have time limits also. So let's move to the second school. The second school says it's about what the employer is purchasing. Now I have to say, I had difficulty in distinguishing between the school of thought based on time and the school of thought based on what he is purchasing. It's clear that they are different, but quantifying the difference is very tricky. The Evan Ozel, the Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, on Hilchos Mechira Yud Gimel Yud Ches, brings the idea. If you take a look at source Ayin Zayin, he says, Venira de Beir Divraya Gemara, the Be'ikar Milsa, Lachalik Ben Poel, Lachablon, who, Mishum de Bekablon Yesh Sivara, de Afdeno Yochol Lehishtabe Ba'ofen Shalo Yuchol Achzor, Mikomakom Tzarech Lios Yado Ala Tachtona, Kaven de Kibel Alav Liktor Akama Vishne Slayim. In Cain, Hashnei Slam, Utashlumin Be'ad Ktsiras Kol Akama. He says, when it comes to the issue of backing out, and why the Kablon, if he backs out, has the lower hand, has the weaker hand, and therefore he's only going to get paid minimally, as we defined last week, the reason is because when you hire the Kablon, you say to him, I want you to harvest my grain, you don't want a half job. You want him to actually harvest the entire thing. And therefore you say, I'm going to pay you two sela to harvest the grain. And he says to you, well, I'm doing half the harvest. You don't give him one sela. He didn't do what you hired him to do. And even though, intellectually, I might want to break it down and say, well, he did half the job, and the half of the job that he did is meaningful, that wasn't what you paid him to do. I'm going to look at this the same way that I'll look at the guy I hired to build a cabinet. He's going to come to me and say, well, I built you half a cabinet. Right? It just won't stand, and it doesn't have a door, and it's going to fall apart the moment that you touch it. My answer to him is, but you didn't build anything. That's not what I hired you to do. I paid you to sell, huh? To actually build me a cabinet. As the mucker continues, he only harvests half, he only reaps half, and then the cost of hiring workers goes up, and now the boss is going to have to pay somebody 1.5 sela to harvest the rest. This is the meaning of yado al hatachtona, him having the lower hand. I don't have to pay him a sela because he did half the job. My only obligation to him was to pay him 2 sela, he harvests the entire thing, and he didn't do that. That's the idea. So it's not an issue of, did he have to work at a particular period of time? It's an issue of, I hired him for the job. I am paying him for the result. You follow? And that may be the meaning of what the Magen Mishnah says in Schirus Tes Dalet. I brought it for you in Source Ayin Ches. The Rambam says, V'ketzad din ha-poel shechazer bo achar shehizchil. So, V'ketzad din ha-poel shechazer bo achar shehizchil. Shama lo masha'asa benotel. He says, what's the status of a poel who backs out? You pay him based on what he did. V'im kavlanu, and if he's a kavlan, ... Then these yado ala tachtona rules. So the Magid Mishnah writes, v'im kavlan who? What do I mean by kavlan? Perish. She'eino sechir zman yodua. He is not being paid for a particular period of time. He's being paid for the task. And I think what he means is what the Ibn Azal is saying. It's not a question of, is he being paid to work at a particular time, but he's being paid based on time. That's the poel. Whereas the kavlan is being paid based on the job. And that, I think, is what the Rama means in Shin Lamed Gimel Hay as well. So that's a second school of thought. You're hiring the guy based on a job, kavlan. You're hiring the guy based on time worked, poel. Clear? That's the second school of thought. However, there is a third school of thought, which I wanted to know because I thought it was a very interesting approach, and it made a lot of sense, but no one else says it. The Machane Ephraim in Sirus Poelim Aleph, at the end of Sirus Poelim Aleph, says in Source Pei, V'nira Shehu, he's talking about the Ritva, Mechalik ben Hecha de Niska Ritza Balabais Lachol Malacha, does Chashiv Gufo Kanui Diach Lashanosa Lachol Malacha Sheyirtza, Masha Einkein Besocher Poel Lamalacha Yedua, De Ein Ze Chashiv Kanui Etzlo, Sherei Eno Yach Lashanosa Lamalacha Acheres. He goes back to the Rambam's definition of Eved. Right, the Rambam said a poel is like an eved. And he says, you know what makes somebody an eved? If you have the person in your employ. As opposed to, you hire him to do a particular job. You have the person in your employ. This person is your employee, and you can tell him to do whatever? He's an eved. If, however, you have no freedom to change what he's doing, you hired him to do a particular job, build cabinets, harvest grapes, whatever it is, that's not an eved. So he goes back to redefine poel on that basis.
That's very unlikely in the Gemara.
Because
you look through all of the Sefer Zohar.
Yeah.
And when the Gemara goes at length of talking about different types of poelim, not kabla, poelim, of I hired him for this, I hired him to be an expert, you know, and make, you know, he's a jewelry maker, and therefore if he finds a mitzvah, it's his own, because I never would have entered my mind to ask him to do a different task. That's a poem, not a kavlan. It's against, like, you know, prakim of Gemara to say that someone, just because I can't change him to a different task, is a kavlan, not an umad. Not a poel.
Agreed. Nonetheless, there's a great logic to it.
It's great logic. It's just against, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, there's a whole other facet of the kavlan issue, which we're not going to go into, because it would take us far, far afield, so to speak. But that's the question of, what about somebody who works with movables that will be attached to land? The Gemara has a case, right? You saw it when you prepared the Gemara. The Gemara has a case with planting seeds. And the question of how I view him if he doesn't plant as he was told to plant. Now, there's a machlokas as to how to read that Gemara and apply it. There's a machlokas we've shown him, and it's very unclear. But within one way to read that Gemara, that's the discussion. Do I view somebody as a kablan and do I view somebody as potentially not being subject, of having onah, right, per the Rambam, if he works with movables, but the movables are going to be attached to the ground, and therefore you should say there's no onah. That's a whole other discussion, which I decided not to go in that direction. But what about the following case? Let's say you have a poel. Let's go back to poel. Leave aside the poel kavlan discussion and go back to just plain old poel. You have somebody you hired by the day. Clear-cut poel. He works with an animal, or he works with a tool, which is may be considered rented for that purpose. We say yesh onah l'schirus. There is onah when it comes to renting animals or renting tools. So if I hire the worker, let's say he is going to plow my field, there's no onah in terms of the worker because he's a poel, but there is onah in terms of the plow and the animal pulling the plow. So how do I deal with this case? So Truma Zadashin dealt with this in Shin Yud Ches in Source Pei Aleph. Reuven Sachar Shimon Shilach Lo Koros Gedolos Min Amayim Leirim Su Social Shimon. Reuven hires Shimon, saying, "I'd like you to bring these large beams from the water to the city using Shimon's own horse." So Shimon is the worker. Shimon's horse is doing the work, right? And then it turns out there was an onah problem. So Reuven, Shimon claims that I was cheated. Shimon wants to go back to Reuven and claim onah. Reuven says, there's no onah, you're a poel. He says, yeah, but you hired my horse. So Truma Zadeshin says, in the second paragraph in Pei Aleph, Amdinan, we gauge, Kama sachar haya roi liten l'shimon atzmo. How much would you have had to pay Shimon? Kama sachar haya lasis b'shvil asus. And how much for the horse? In other words, I paid him $100 for the day. If he had told me I'm not bringing my own horse, so I would have paid him $70. $30 was horse rental. So that's how you figure it out. And then based on that calculation of 70-30, you then figure out how much of the onah was attributable to the 70, how much of the onah is attributable to the 30, and that's the way that you're going to do it. The Mishpat Shalom says this as well. It's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambah in Reish Chav Zayin Lamed Gimel. However, not everybody agrees with the Truma Sadeshin. The Machane Ephraim, Gezela Yud Aleph, says no. That's not so. In Source Pei Beis, he says V'davka Gabei Adam Hu D'Mechuyav B'Sheves. He's dealing with a separate discussion. I'm going to actually say it outside of it first. He says, look, the Gemara says that if you hire a worker with donkeys, and then it turns out there was no job. Okay, you told him show up on Tuesday. And I want you to work with your donkeys on Tuesday. Then Tuesday comes around, and there's no work for him. So the rule is I have to pay him sheves. I caused him to lose a day of work. So I have to pay him something for the day that he's not working. The rule is, even though there's no sheves for animals, you pay him for the entire sum. You pay him for the entire job. So Machane Ephraim says that shows that everything is lumped together in the worker's wages. I don't break out the worker and the animal. You said you're going to pay him $100 for the day. It's all based on that $100. The Pesach Choshen expands on this in Chelek Dalet Perek Ches Ha'arovah, and he says it seems clear that even if you take the Trumas Hadeshin's approach of breaking it down, this is the worker and this is the kli, or this is the worker and this is the animal, it's only relevant where the kli is significant enough that someone would rent it on its own. If I hire a carpenter and he brings his own hammer, we don't break out the salary based on this is for the carpenter and this is for the hammer. Right? This is going to be one of those go to the Beis Din and they have to have a feel for what the norm is. But there are certain cases where the kli is significant enough, the animal is significant enough that it really stands on its own, and then maybe we'll go with the Trumas Hadeshin. However, in many cases we're going to go with the Machane Ephraim and say no, everything is attributable to the employee himself. Certainly, where the employer specified that he's hiring the horse or the kli, then we're going to go with the Trumas Hadeshin. In other words, if he says, I want to hire you and you have to bring your horse, then there's a separate. Then you break out the rental fee.
So in secular law, there would be you'd get back into the poel kavlan problem.
Yeah.
because usually that's one of the tests that the person brings his own tools.
Brings his own tools, right?
Right.
Right.
So would that change any of us if we did get into the poll?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because we don't have that as one of our standards. That doesn't seem to be within halacha one of our standards. The question would be, would that change over time based on the way people's definition of their work changes over time? That would be an interesting question. In other words, what the Gemara calls a kabbalan, maybe we will at some point call a poel, or vice versa. What the Gemara calls a poel, if we say now that people view themselves... No, but I don't think that should change it.
No, well, I don't think that should change. You got into that...
Yeah.
Thing with Paul and Kavim, would that change the Truma Sedesher of the Machane Ephraim, or would it be independent of that?
No, independent. Last notes on the worker case. If you hire somebody for a job that has a set price that could be clarified from before, this is a piece I saw from a journal called Beis David, Rabbi Pinchas Landman. Ona b'mechir pituach tmunot. The deal is someone's getting married, and they hire a photographer. And the photographer charges more for the photographs, for the first run of the photographs, than other people do. However, his justification is that in the event that you want multiple copies, right, there could be an album for the parents on this side, an album for the parents on that side, whatever it is, if you want multiple copies, he charges less than other photographers do. So they hire him for the job. Then they find out, after he's prepared the album, they find out that he charged more for developing the photographs, developing the pictures. They want to claim Ona. However, this is long after Kadesha Yara Latagar. Or let's say it's not long after Kadesha Yara Latagar. It's the next day. It's the day after the wedding. Forget about that. It's the day after the wedding. So the question is, can they claim Ona in this situation? That was their, that's their Shiloh. So Ari Landman says, if you hire somebody for a job that has a set price that could have been clarified beforehand, that's Kadesh Yara Latagar. Meaning, for those who aren't holding it, no. Kadesh Yara Latagar means that if I buy an item and I determine afterwards that it was overpriced, because I show it to somebody who knows what he's doing, then I'm able to come back and claim the Ona. However, if enough time passed that I could have shown it to an expert, and then, after that time has elapsed, then I claim Ona, it's too late. Statute of limitations is over. I'm not able to make that claim. So Rabbi Landman argues, when you hire somebody to do a job that has a set price, and everybody knows what this thing costs, you can't claim Ona afterwards, because your time to show it, so to speak, was beforehand. You had the chance to price out the job before the wedding. That's his argument. Unfortunately, I don't know what in the world he does with the Sma. The Sma in Reish Chav Zayin, Samachay, quoting the Magid Mishnah in Hilchos Mechira Yud Gimel Yud Zayin, says explicitly there is no issue of Kadesh Yara Latagar when you're dealing with workers. If you take a look at Pe Gimel, this is the Rambam. The Rambam writes, when you rent an animal, you rent tools, there is onah, because we view the rental as like a sale, it's just a temporary sale. The words I bolded, it doesn't matter how long afterwards. It says the Magid Mishnah in Pei Dalid, he says, when the Rambam writes, you can do it even after a long period of time. He says, the Magid Mishnah says explicitly, that the only time there's a limit of you can show it to somebody is if you're dealing with a physical item. You buy the item, and then you show it to somebody. However, anytime you are hiring or renting, there is no issue, there's no limitation of when you show it to an expert. So instead of going the Rabbi Landman approach and saying, and therefore you should have looked into it beforehand, he goes the opposite direction and says, no, there's no statute of limitations whatsoever. So the argument I would give is that just the opposite, you can go back to the wedding photographer anytime you like. Now, there may be a separate reason why the wedding photographer case is not an issue. And that is, where the work is done, and there's a product to show for it, the customer is out of luck because he doesn't want to lose the album. Right? In other words, this goes back to a shiur we gave much earlier on. What happens if there really is onah? Right? What's supposed to happen? Bitul mekach. The sale is off. The transaction is off. In which case, you have to turn over the album and you get all your money back. What if you say, well, I don't want to do that. I just want you to refund me the amount that you overcharged. You can't do that. That's not, you don't have the right to make that claim. It's all or nothing. So when this happy couple goes back to him and says, we want our money back, he's going to say, okay, give me the album. And once they say, we're not giving the album back, he's going to say, well, I'm too bad. You're out of luck. Right. So for that reason...
And you took it back and then they want to buy it off of him. And then it's Mechira Lib Alibi.
Yes.
The actual classic.
Correct.
Flipped, but it's...
Yeah, but then it's flat out sale and nothing further to discuss. Okay.
None of this addresses what the issue I thought was, though, because
yeah.
Here he charges more at the beginning, but then it's less at the end. So is it on at all?
Yes, because they didn't come back to him for a second round, and it's a separate transaction. Unless you're going to tell me that it's built into the original deal.
Yeah.
In other words, when you hire him, you say, I want also an X number of albums. Then there's something to discuss along the lines of what you're saying, but I think that's not the norm. Okay. Other item having nothing to do with workers. If you weren't holding in Poel and Koblen, you can now come back. Onah for items that are worth more to this particular buyer. The Gemara Bavitzia Nun Chesem at Beis. I brought it for you in Source Behe. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afamocher Sefer Torah, Margulis Ubehema Elam Onah. That's a quote from our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda said, when you sell a Sefer Torah, a gem, an animal, there is no Onah. Tanya, we quote a Brisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afamocher Sefer Torah, Elam Onah. Why? Lafisha Ein Kates Ledameha. There is no end to the value of a Sefer Torah. Right? $35,000 these days? But. I think that's, I think so. It's probably, well, first of all, you're in Canada, so it changes all your numbers. But anyway. An animal, a gem, no. Why? Because you want to match them up with other things you have. You have a setting you want it to be in, it goes well with something else, so there is no onah. So Amrullah, they say back to Yehuda, Balo Hakola, them wrote to Lazavan. That's true for anything. I buy products all the time because they work well with other things I have. I want this knife, it'll look good in my set. I want this plate, whatever it is. Rabbi Yehuda, what did Rabbi Yehuda say? Hani chashivile vahani lo chashivile. No, these items are particularly significant. And you want them because you want this animal because it will pull well with the other animal that you have when you yoke it to the plow. Ve'ad kama, what's your max? Rabbi Meir says up to double, which is something that we've of course discussed. That's the statement, and then we get further in the Gemara. Rabbi Ben Becerra says during wartime, horses, swords, and shields. I should have brought it on here. I don't know why I didn't. Horses, swords, and shields have no onah because you need them for survival. You're willing to pay whatever it is. And in practice, the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat Reish Chav Zayin Tezvav follows the view of the Chachamim that there is Onah for these items. So what's the Machlokas about? So there's an article called Din Onah Bischora Balat Erech Mishtana. The status of Onah when you're dealing with something that has a price that changes. Rabbi Yehuda Youngster. I believe Youngster is the way to turn his name into English. Yud Vav Nun Gimel Samach Tet Reish.
This is the one from
Kidafei Chavtan. Yes. So he points out, the one that we had looked at ages ago. Yeah. Right. So so he says, it's very hard to think that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that these things have no set price. Some want to contend that's what Rabbi Yehuda means. There's no set price for these items. But it doesn't make sense. First of all, it doesn't make sense, because then why would the Chacham disagree? Is this a machlokes in mitzvus? The Chacham say there is a set price, or Rabbi Yehuda says there is not? The Gemara doesn't sound like that. But number two, what would you do with a Meimar? A Meimar says up to 100%. 100% of what? If you believe there's no set price. So it doesn't make sense to say that there's no set price here. That's not what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing. So Rabbi Youngster floats a few ideas, but one in particular that I wanted to draw from his article. It's a debate about items which are of special importance to a specific group of people. And this brings us back to a Gemara in Kiddushin that we used a while back. Source Peifav. Rav Kahana is a Kohen. Rav Kahana shakil sudra mi beit pidyon haben. Instead of paying him with a special commemorative set of silver shkalim, they paid him with a sudar. with some kind of a turban, scarf, with cloth, whatever it is. They gave him that for the figure not bet. Amar Leh, Ledidi Chazi Lichamei Shloim, he said, this is worth 5 stela to me. And therefore, I accept that as payment of the pidyon. So the Ritva on that says the following in source page Zion, Mishamina Mehacha, we learn from here. Shamocher Chevetz Chavero, that if you sell somebody something, Bishis, you sell it to them for 6. Ubishuk lo shavu ala chamisha. But in the market, it's only worth 5. Ilahai lo keach shavi shisa, if it's worth 6 to the buyer, ain bo ona. No, no claim. To Buster Dida Yazlinan, because we care about what he has in mind. Just like in Kiddushin, we said, yeah, this is worth 5 sela to him. Now, the base Yitzchak has a shuvah.
There's a shar on the site?
Correct. Doesn't make a difference. Now, he, for him, it's worth 6 or whatever it is.
If someone, you know, walks into the store and actually pays, you know, 6 slime for something that. You know,
so you know what?
The price is 5. Well, clearly it's worth 6 to him.
Hold the question for 1 second. The next source is going to address that. The Beis Yitzchak has a tshuva on the issue of buying a srogim on Erev Sukkos. So they jack up price because everybody needs an esrog at that point. So if you take a look at source Peches, he says Mitchilas divrei Ritva Yeshlo Amar Lechora Bekona Esrog Litzorcho Avdik Sheyishal Letagar Yomer Sheshava Pachos. Right? Even if the merchant would say to him, it's not worth all that, nonetheless, ain bo ona. There is no ona. Da mocher yocholi don dilididach shava yoser. The seller can say it's worth more to you. Kevin shiva esrogim talya shivu lefiadim. It's all based on the person, how many hours he has left until Sukkot and what his options are. Ach ze eino. But he says it's not so. Didamka kishen no da bebeiru lididay shava yoser ain bo ona. It's only if, and this is the point, Ariel, only if we know clearly that for him this is actually worth more. There's no ona. Kigon Rav Kahana, the Gavar Rabbo boy Sudra. Rav Kahana was a great man, and he needed a sudar. He needed the turban or the cloth that would make him look good. But b'stama lo ka'ama rakfi mashashava. But otherwise, no. We assume that if somebody buys it for 6, it's because he thought that's the going rate, and therefore that's what I have to pay. If you tell him it's only 5, he's going to say, well, then I'm not paying 6. That's the position of the Beis Yitzchak. You have to know for sure. However, the Ketzos asks a question. He says, then why do we say that there's an onah when it comes to the Sefer Torah, when it comes to the gem? Right? He says in Peites, he says, the view of the Chachamim in our Gemara is Margolios and these other things, yesh lo onah. What are you going to do about that? Right? He says, even if the buyer actually does need it. So the answer for the Ketos is the following. Number one, where the item has special utility in a particular situation, right? Jungster's example is, you set up a stall selling bottles of water at the beach. Not that you've ever been to the beach and you don't know where it is, but let's say it's a separate beach. So you set up a stall selling water. The water has special utility in a particular situation. And everybody knows people there need water. So there's no ona. It has true value to that market. Where the item has special meaning for one person who desperately needs it, then raising the price is ona. Even though you'll say, well, it's worthwhile to him, the Ritva says explicitly it's not so. In Source Tzadi, he says, "Miu davka b'deshavi lezabuna shisa ki orche." He says it's only true. This principle is only true that if it's worth this to him, then there's no ona. If it's worth it to buy 6 normally, meaning there's more than just this individual. But if it wouldn't be worth it to him either, except that he's stuck. Setting a price out of the chak, that doesn't count. Even if you paid for it, nonetheless, you can actually claim it back. Yeah.
The distinction then would be between one person and multiple, a whole group of people then?
Or one person in the normal case and one person who's in a uniquely painful situation.
Okay.
The question is, where in the world did he get this distinction from?
What about something like medication? Where?
That's exactly what we have to ask. That's exactly right. So according to the Ritva, you can't jack up the price. I mean, this is the this is the case that we've discussed on other occasions, right? This is the what was his name, Shkreli, Martin Shkreli case. This is the EpiPen discussion, more recently. But yeah, Daraprim, that was the drug that Shkreli raised the price on. So the question, though, was where did the Ritva get this from? If you had stopped me before this line, I would have assumed, well, it has true value to it. To the person who is dealing with this problem, the medicine is worthwhile. So he bases it on Yevamos Kuf Vav. Yevamos Kuf Vav Amud Aleph talks about the case of Chalitza and Meshata Anibach. There's a man who's supposed to do Chalitza, and he's refusing. So you're able to go to him and promise him, if you do the chalitza, I'll give you $1,000. And once he does the chalitza, you can say, Mishat Anibach, I was just kidding. How is that? So his answer is that Mishat Anibach is a function of Onah. This is against everything we said when we did Bava Kama Kupta Zion on the ferry case. And we had to give all sorts of explanations for why there's no Onah there. Nonetheless, Rav Jungster says, no, the fact that I can come to you and say, I'll pay you anything, and then once I have the service or the product, I can say, just kidding, is because what he has done is to violate Onah. And that's the Ritva's basis for saying that if it's a particular need in a particular situation, and it's not that the item is worth it to me, it's worth it to me right now because I'm in pain and I need this, then it is Onah. That's his argument. And going back to the Ketzos then, that's why the gems are the Sefer, the machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham about the gems and the Sefer Torah, that's an intermediate case. Because the merchandise is not uniquely special for this person. It has certain special traits which will make it appealing for a class of people, but not all people. It's in between. It's not one person, and it's not everybody. And that's why it's a machlokis. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no Onah, because it's like everybody. And the Chacham say there is Onah, because it's like the individual. That's the way to read this. So applying this to the medicine case, jacking up the price for him as an individual is indeed Onah, but raising the price because a group of people would want it, maybe you can make the argument, let's say the EpiPen versus Daraprim. Daraprim is less commonly needed than the EpiPen. At a certain point, you reach a threshold where you say, now it's a community, and therefore the laws of Onah will not apply. Yeah?
When you saw it on the beach, what did you raise the shop? This is the shop. This is the shop on the beach.
Right. That's correct. Why is that true? Because in this situation, that's what it's worth for people, and somehow we're saying that when you're dealing with one person, the laws change. I don't know where the dividing line is between one person and 1,000 people. Is it when it's 3 people? Is it when it's 10 people? I don't know. Is it because the circumstances are dependent on the individual? I find that a very hard sell. Because you could say regarding the beach that it's all. That each of these people is hot and sweaty. So I don't know where you're going to make your distinction. But he seems to be convinced that regarding one person there is Onah. Regarding one person, yes, there is Onah. Regarding a group of people, there is it's not Onah. There's no claim of Onah. Because that's now the normal price. I don't know where you draw your line. I suspect it's based in case by case. Last note. The issue of Onah in today's markets, which we've already discussed going back to the shiur on defining 1/6, how do you deal with it in our own day? Meaning, today we don't know how to evaluate a baseline price. The range of prices for most items defies setting a particular price. The price fluctuates constantly so that it's hard to gauge and hard to determine what somebody would be willing to forgive. Right? If I assume that the reason why up to 1/6 is not Onah is because people forgive it, I don't know what people will forgive today. The pool of merchants is too great to allow gauging proper price, and it's very hard to determine, again, what somebody would forgive. So you might be able to make the argument that today's products are in the category called Eila and Shar. They don't have a price. In which case we have an established machlokes and psak. Right? This we already know. If you take a look at the Rambam, it's source Sadi Aleph. Hamat nil chaveru davar she'eino misuyan. if I give somebody else, if I make a transaction with somebody else, that he can have davar she'eino misuyam, something that doesn't, you know. Question. Before I start on this, do you want to use 10 minutes for introducing an Ostorm just that they can have a shear from you also? No? Okay. Nah. Offered. If I am going to sell somebody, give somebody, transact with somebody such that they're going to get goods that are not misuyam, that are not well defined, there is still onda. So his case is, if the species of items is known, I tell you I'm selling you bananas. But I didn't tell you how many bananas. I'm going to sell you bananas for $10. Give me $10, I'm going to give you bananas. That works. But if I don't even tell you bananas, I'm going to sell you something for $10. That's nonsense. Because no one actually intends such a transaction. No one was serious. I'm going to sell you this pile of wheat for such and such a sum, or this wine cellar full of wine, basket of or bag of figs. Even though I don't know the dimensions, I don't know the number, I don't know the weight, the sale is valid. That's the principle. The sale is valid, and then the Rambam writes at the end, v'yesh lem honaya l'fishar shebashuk. He says, and ona will apply based on whatever the going rate in the market is. Where did the Rambam get this from? According to the Kesef Mishnah, this is the Rambam's source. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Huna, Machor li be'elu, kana v'yesh lo alav ona. If somebody says, sell me these goods for this money, but I don't know how much money is there, so we flipped it now. You know what the goods are, you don't know what the money is. And the guy says, okay, kana, v'yeshlo alabona, that works. Kana afagab delo mashach, dekema delo kapid, kana deki chalip and dami, v'yeshlo alabona, de mechorli be'elu ka'amar lam. We leave aside the discussion about mashicha and chalipin, but he does acquire it, and there is a claim of ona, because he said, sell it to me for this. Rav Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Mechorli Ve'elu Kana Ve'elo Alavona. Rav Abba quotes Rav Huna disagreeing. So it's machlokas to what Rav Huna said. There is no Ona. Pshita Damim Ve'ein Machbed Alayin. It's obvious because he doesn't care about the amount. So how can you claim Ona? He just bought it without, he just sold it without knowing how much money he was getting. And the only reason the Kenyan works is because it's like Khalifin. The Rambam indeed paskins that there is ona in source Sadi Gimel, and that case halokeach bedamim, and you can pronounce it however you wish. Akisara, the kigon shechafan mimaus va'amar lo mecholi prasabelu. If a person if a person buys with an approximate amount of money, just gives him a handful of cash and says, "I'm buying it with this," it works. Umachzir ona, and there is ona. So the Rambam's position is that where the item or the currency is not specified, the sale works, and there is a claim of ona. Clear? However, I have a problem, and that's Bav Metzia Samach Dalet, source Tzadi Dalet. Ha'olech lachlov as he's of, someone who goes to milk his goats, or to shear his sheep, or to get honey from the hive, and somebody encounters him and says, and he says to the guy he encounters, I want to sell you whatever my goats produce today. I want to sell you whatever wool I get off of the sheep. I want to sell you whatever honey I get from the hive. Mutter. The rule of sale is valid, and the reason you have to say it's valid in the Gemara is because there's no concern for ribbis. I'm not getting into the ribbis discussion right now. But that's what is stated here in the Gemara. So here it's a case in which you make a sale without specifying whatever the item is, right? And even though it doesn't match the sale price, you acquire everything. Apparently there's no ona. No one mentioned anything about ona. Right? You acquire the whole thing. So on the one hand, I have the Rambam telling me, based on one Gemara and Bava Metzia, that if you sell unspecified goods, there is ona. And then on the other hand, I have this other Gemara that says that when you buy whatever milk the goats produce, there is no ona. Which is it? When you don't specify, is there ona or isn't there ona? So there are a couple of resolutions for this problem. One resolution is the Beis Yosef's resolution. The Beis Yosef says that the answer is, I'm going to just do this outside of the sources at this point in order to finish this. The Beis Yosef says milk doesn't have a set price. You pay whatever you pay, and there is no onah claim. And there's basis for this in the rush that I brought you about renting a communal consumption tax that fluctuates from year to year. There's a similar argument. The logic behind it, saying that if milk doesn't have a set price, there's no onah claim, the Aruch HaShulchan says the logic behind it is that each price can claim legitimacy. Right? There is no one price that is right. So any price works. Rav Asher Weiss says a different point. He argues that today's world, of caveat emptor, right? Buyer beware, is like amanash ein lecha alai ona. When you sell someone something and say, I'm selling it to you on condition that there is no claim of ona, without the requirement of knowing the bounds of ona, since this is the norm, without the Gemara's requirement that's involved. So there's no ona other than for regulated prices. It's a little bit of a different argument from the Aruch HaShulchan's argument. The Aruch HaShulchan's argument is ona only exists in markets that have a single price. Once you have multiple prices, no one price is correct. Rav Asher Weiss's argument is that it's because ona is about the buyer's frame of mind. What was the buyer thinking? And in today's market, the buyer is thinking, I'm going to pay whatever he demands, and I'm not going to claim anything back if I find out that it was available cheaper somewhere else. That's not the way the world works today. It's about the buyer's frame of mind. So this school of thought says that if there's no set price, you pay whatever you pay, and there is no claim of ona. Now, there are two objections to this. The Bach objects, because the Rambam writes in Echas Mechira Yogimel Beis, the Rambam writes that if you sell somebody the cow, right, one of the cases that we had here, if you sell somebody the cow for a handful of cash, his cows have no set price. So why is the Rambam saying that there's onah in that case? And then the Dakei Moshe also asks in Reish Tes Aleph, even if there is no set price, you should be able to do some evaluation. But this is all one approach. One approach, the Beis Yosef's approach, is milk doesn't have a set price, and therefore there's no onah claim, and that may apply for our markets today. The Bach gives a different approach. The Bach's approach is that the milk case wasn't a discussion of onah. The milk's case was only a discussion of ribis. The Gemara wasn't talking about onah. The case of I'm going to sell you whatever my cow produces today wasn't an onah discussion. And that's why the Gemara didn't mention onah. And this is quoted in the Shach and Reish Tes Aleph as well. Similar idea in the Derech Moshe and Chosh and Mishpat Reish Tes Aleph. So don't bring me any proofs from this. So this is now the key. If I take the Beis Yosef's approach, items that lack a set price have no law of onah. If I take the Bach's approach, items that have no set price do have onah, have claims of onah. So this is a very big deal. So applying it to our concern about contemporary pricing, if I'm talking about a case in which prices fluctuate, and therefore you're not able to determine a price, we go back to the Beis Yitzchak regarding Esrogim on Erev Sukkos. The Beis Yitzchak says, where the price is constantly shifting, even the Shach, who adopted the Bach's view where there's no set price, even he will agree that there's no claim of onah. If the price is constantly shifting, in addition to saying there are different prices around, the price is actually changing, then everybody agrees there is no onah, says the Beis Yitzchak. And therefore we'll say, whoever's holding the money wins. He'll say, even the person who is holding on to the money right now will say, the person who sold you the esrog, is going to say, I follow the Beis Yosef that there's no onah, and that'll be that. Rav Asher Weiss, sorry? Okay. Rav Asher Weiss is even stronger than he understands the Beis Yitzchak to be. He says fluctuation is a factor to say we don't have onah in today's general marketplace because it changes so much. So fluctuation may succeed in defeating even the Bach's argument. Unless there are set prices, in which case all bets are off entirely, and there isn't even a 1/6. Correct. What about the issue of there being too many prices in the marketplace? Not a fluctuating thing. It doesn't change. But there are just too many prices out there. So here, some try to solve the problem. The Erech Shai says, you know what we do? We define normal commerce based on the lowest price on the market. He learns it from Vilna's Rivas. You go with the lowest price. Whatever the lowest price out there on the market is, that's what you work with. Rav Asher Weiss says to him, what are you talking about? Why should one individual be empowered to swing the market? He's going to give you a very low price, and now everybody else is guilty of onah. That doesn't make any sense. He doesn't accept that. The Pesach Choshen offers three approaches. One approach is go by most merchants. So you're going with the median price. The second approach is go by the mean price. The average, what we think of as average. Or honor the maximum and minimum prices where they help the defendant. They will solve to help the defendant within the range of maximum and minimum prices. There is a basis, Rav Asher Weiss notes, that there is a basis for going with the mean approach, the average approach. Like when we evaluate what are considered standard wages, we do that. But he still doesn't like it because of the fluctuation issue. Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg says, I go with the median price. That's his position. He says, go with the median price, or you appraise the particular item at hand. So some do try to solve the problem and say, well, there are still ways to find prices, even bizmanenu. And yes, your favorite tshuva of Rav Wozner, who says that everybody's guilty of onah, you're all evil, and...
Every other part of the tshuva is just as strange.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The first part of the tshuva is that women aren't allowed to drive, and that's why they're...
All right. The others, though... like, hello. They, but others disagree and say there is no onah. So one is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan's position is there is no onah because each price is legitimate. There is no claim of onah unless you're suicidally extreme in the masochism of the price that you paid, or the price that was set by the merchant. In other words, if the merchant is setting his prices like OPEC a couple of years ago, just trying to kill all the competition, that's a different story. But barring that, each price is legitimate, and again, he eliminates onah unless you have the case in which there actually is a set price, in which case, even if you're off by a penny, you're now off of the price, and the guy can claim onah. It doesn't even have to be 1/6. Rav Asher Weiss in Dinei Onah Bizman Hazeh says that you can make the argument of, I follow the view of those who deny onah when we have these unknown prices, and you can follow the Beis Yosef, in other words, and therefore not be vulnerable to any claims of onah. The Pesach Choshen isn't so sure that this is actually a good idea. The Pesach Choshen does not like the Kim Lee argument, because he argues that Kim Lee, where you say, I follow this particular point of view, isn't a good idea lechatchila when you're dealing with an Isser. You could end up violating a prohibition by doing this. In other words, you're overcharging somebody. Or saying Kim Lee in this situation may not be a good idea. Nonetheless, the upshot of this, just to sum up what we've said on onah in today's markets, is the proliferation of different prices creates a problem, as well as the fluctuation of the prices. We went back to the Rambam, who says that when you sell goods with really an unknown quantity, but therefore an unknown price, there is onah. We had a problem because of the case in which you sold whatever milk my goats will produce, and there apparently is no onah. One approach to it is to say, well, milk doesn't have a set price, and there is no onah in set price cases. The other approach is to say, no, the Gemara would believe there's onah. It just wasn't discussing onah right now. That's the Bach. And coming out of that, there is a school of thought that says our situation today is like the milk that has no set price, and therefore onah does not apply today, again, unless there is a particular rigid price. And then the other school of thought says, no, we actually will try to solve the problem and identify prices by taking the high and the low, the average, the median, whatever it is. I realize that I rushed through this a lot. I'd highly recommend going back and seeing the sources on it. I hope that this was worthwhile for people who had not been dealing in onah beforehand. Shkayach. Having a Shabbos.